Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of Esports Boom, your mostly weekly podcast that covers everything esports business news. My name is Maurice Eisenman, and this time I'm not joined by my co-host Anton. Anton is traveling. So for the next couple of weeks, I will be hosting the podcast together with a guest host. And boy, we got a very special treat for you this week. I am very happy to say that I'm joined with Ben Fisher of the Sports Business Journal. Sports Business Journal in traditional sports is really the industry magazine that everyone looks up to. And Ben is particularly fond of covering esports and the Olympics, but we'll focus on esports right now. And we're very happy to have you here. Ben, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. It's really exciting times to be covering esports. I leave for the Winter Olympics in 9 days, but in the meantime, let's dive into some esports. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thank you for making out the time to come by then. We've been out. We haven't had a chance to record a podcast the last few weeks. So even though there was a lot of news, we really had to be selective in what stories we picked. And even though this the first story that we're going to cover isn't really a direct something that happened this week, it's still a story that was so important that we need to mention it. And I think that's the OWL and the NALCS, with regards to viewership in their first couple of weeks. So just going through the facts. So the OWL at around 425,000 viewers at its peak in its week one. Right now, they are at about 75,000 concurrence on the French, Korean, and the main English channel. Last week, that was at about 109,000. Just looking on the other side at the NALCS, they peaked at about 401,000 without the Chinese viewers, according to eSport Charts. And that's really, really interesting. But before I'll get too much into it, Ben, what are your initial thoughts about these numbers?
Well, the first thing I got to say is that I'm just so glad to have actual data about the Overwatch League and the new NALCS. Most of the last year was talking about what the OWL might be or might not be, and nothing but opinions. And now I've got some actually facts to deal with. I think as far as the Overwatch League goes, they got what they needed out of week one, which was a big splash. They were able to put the press release out that said 10 million viewers. And we all know those are uniques and not concurrents, and those are global and all of that. But they were able to give that splash, which I think everybody really desperately needed them to do, not just for the investors, but for everybody in esports. Now I think we're into the hard weeks. This is week one, week two, week three, and some headline somewhere today said that they're to their new normal of somewhere in the high five figures or low six figures, and I'm not sure we're there yet. Who's to say it's not going to go down again this week? But it's a long term play, and as long as they've got some growth in between now and the end of the season, I think they'll be okay. Let's see how much it goes down this week too, I think.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on the target. I mean, obviously the big positive was that, some people were speculating that if we get 100,000 viewers the first week, it's very good. And then the first couple of days really blew everyone out of the water. I was very happy to see that. But as I told a few people, I said, what will really define the success or potential failure of the OWL is whether, in week six, when it's, two bottom, average teams playing against each other, what is the viewership then?
Right.
There was a lot of integration. There was an integration in the actual Overwatch launcher. So when you start up the game, you could see, the OWL is playing, so I think that probably boosted up viewership as people clicked on that link. Very, very excited to see these numbers. But tell the audience, it'll be good to follow this further and see what the viewership is in the next couple of weeks. But I do think I would love to hear what you think, but I do think that this is a good sign when it comes to expansion, because at least it shows that I think that a lot of these traditional sports owners that are thinking about expanding at least didn't see a big failure. They saw a success story.
Right, right. I think that, you know, the MLG and Blizzard guys can go out into the market and get meetings, at least right now. I think there was a fear that once we actually put the Overwatch League in play, they were just going to get doors shut in their face. And they sold 12 franchises based on hype and Bobby Kotick's personality, and that they wouldn't sell anymore. I think clearly they've got something to talk about. Now, they still need to close those deals, but so far they've got something to at least get those meetings continue to be going. Another point I wanted to make about the numbers here is that we look at the numbers because ultimately eyeballs are what they're selling to sponsors and media, but not all eyeballs are created equal at this point. A lot of conversations with sports marketers in my world that have been so underwhelmed by esports presentations so far, what they've seen in sort of pre-franchised esports. It's confusing. They don't understand exactly what the point of the viewer experience is. They're, you know, low def streams, not great experiences. And I'm not a sports marketer, but I talk to traditional sports marketers every day. And what they saw with the first couple of weeks of Overwatch is something that may or may not have the numbers right now, but it is absolutely a professional production.
Yes.
It caught their eye as something that I can at least not get fired for suggesting to my boss that we sponsor this.
So the OWL was still, I'm a casual Overwatch player, so I don't put in the hours to fully understand the game. But the kind of the promise of the OWL was, here's a league that's the ultimate casual league. Like, here's a league that can be promising both for a hardcore audience, but also for the general audience that just plays Overwatch once in a while. It was still difficult for me to follow, and I talked to some of my friends who play more than casually, and they said, you know, it was difficult to follow for them as well. So that's, I think, the spectator mode is something they have to work on. And also, as you mentioned about the production, it was beautiful. What will be interesting to see is the audience, I think, kind of expects the Blizzard Arena, which is really built to present Overwatch. I mean, the roof like changes color based on whatever happens in the game. Mm-hmm. I wonder, like, if the promise of the Overwatch, you know, league continues and eventually we'll get to a point where they move to their home venues, it'll be a completely different situation. So that'll be something I think the fans will need to take into consideration.
That's a really good point, and why I think as much as we've got to talk about Overwatch League right now, you know, it's 19 or 20 before we see the full vision of this, because once you put them in 12 different venues, then we're going to start to see which the good venues are and which the bad venues are, and who's got the AT&T Park and who's got the old Veterans Stadium. You know, there's going to be differences, and that's an entirely new angle of it that we haven't begun to discuss.
Yeah, but the promise of the OWL is really good. I like to see there were some, I think Houston, San Francisco had sold out watch parties, you know, a few hundred people, some say even 1,000 at one event. That's great. That's exceeded my expectation. Let's move on to the NALCS a little bit.
Sure.
Not as surprising. The viewership numbers kind of are in line with what we've seen before. The big story was, oh, you know, OWL had a little bit more viewers, but I think, and this is an estimate, but I think that in a few weeks we'll see the NALCS numbers be, you know, pretty high, and we'll see the OWL numbers, as we've seen before, kind of drop down a little bit more. So right now, I think I got a message, as you were saying, about sports marketers. I got a message from traditional sports marketers that were saying, isn't the OWL doing better than the NALCS? Let's wait a little bit to see that. Have you had a chance to watch it, or what are your thoughts?
I haven't really seen much of the new and improved LCS at this point. But I think you're absolutely right that Overwatch is the sexy story of the moment, and really probably a more dynamic news story. But I don't think there's any reason to believe that it's overtaken LCS at this point. And it's probably a long ways away from that, pending future viewership stats. But I feel like LCS, I mean, the reason people are paying attention to it is because of the franchising process, which was, of course, extraordinarily consequential for everyone involved and a really neat story to follow. But I don't know, in real terms, is what you're seeing on the screen now so different than it was last year?
Not really. But it was already a great production.
Right, right. It's what's an equivalent? I feel like there's maybe an equivalent in like a, going back to my old days as a political reporter, where there was, you know, it's a primary and there's three candidates and every reporter is falling around the guy who's gone from 5% to 20% in the polls, but there's still someone at 35% who almost certainly is going to win. So, you know, that's perfectly justifiable for a journalist to pay attention to the little guy who's made great strides, but there's still the little guy.
Exactly. And while we shouldn't go too much into what I'm about to say, one of the things I saw that really surprised me, and apparently it's a story that has already been there, been covered before, but Jimmy Wang, if I hope I pronounce her name correctly, from Superdata. She focuses on the Chinese esports and gaming market. She tweeted something out that the LPL, the Chinese version of the NALCS, so to say, that they're actually moving into a city-based league as well. They're franchising heavily. And that there were rumors about this. And, you know, I don't want to go into it because it's a story that unfortunately I haven't been able to verify as much, but I trust her. She has a track record of not, you know, tweeting out stuff that is baloney, so to say.
Hmm. Well, I don't have any other personal knowledge of that myself, but I think if Overwatch is remotely successful, you're going to see a rush toward geographic-based dynamics of esports. I think that's one of the things that keeps a traditional sports sponsorship budget from getting involved with it, is they don't understand the nature of a fan base, that it is sort of global but not really, and you know, you anchor it to a city and that's something they understand, and I you know, if there's any evidence at all of that working, then I think you're going to see that in short order spread throughout the world.
You know, let's move on to our second story. So Facebook, this is kind of a combination of two stories, but we'll focus on the first one first and the second one, and we'll talk more about the underlining category. But Facebook, you know, they challenged Twitch with a deal with ESL, an exclusive deal. So basically, as ESL's main broadcast partner, Facebook will stream Dota 2 and Counter-Strike Global Offensive competitions from ESL 1, as well as a dedicated CSGO Pro League. So Ben, you know, once again, what are your, you know, initial thoughts on this story?
Well, I guess I shouldn't be, but I was a little surprised with how quickly the switch got flipped into exclusivity as a driving force in esports deals. It wasn't that long ago that I was seeing panel discussions about how, you know, right now the drive is still just get as many eyeballs as possible, which means we'll put it on any streaming platform that wants to put it on there. Really, in a span of about 6 months, we're to a point now where there's been, what, several exclusive deals announced in a short period of time. And you know, I think that's when I was on the phone with the ESL and Facebook people as we were reporting this story, there's a few quotes that stick out in my mind that, you know, make the point. Ken Hirschman from the World Esports Association, which is, you know, basically ESL, and some other teams, said there's a sense that if we were everywhere, we were nowhere. And that those one-to-one relationships allows much more progress to be made on the monetization front. And that's certainly what ESL saw with Facebook, and I think what Overwatch League saw with Twitch and their big deal. That, you know, yeah, you probably are losing some eyeballs by going exclusive, but that's more than made up for on the media rights, just the money side of the deal, and the depth with which you can partner with a distribution partner.
Yeah, so this reminds me, YouTube has bought exclusive video streams in the past. And for them, it didn't do well in the beginning, was with CSGO, but then they built it up and now it has significant numbers. With ESL, you know, the first broadcast started and it got like 5,000 people for Dota 2, which is horrible. But then again, Anton put on Twitter and a thread that basically said that at any moment, Facebook has like 10,000 different versions of Facebook running for different users. And some of them can be like video focused, where if you remotely like esports, you'll see ESL pop into your feed. Another one can be if you don't particularly like the ESL Dota Facebook page, you won't see anything. So I think that Facebook is buying this library of live content and will move away more to the versions that kind of push it into people's faces than right now. Because I remember from traditional sports, the Champions League games, Fox had to deal with with Facebook, and the numbers were really bad. And that was really surprising. And one of the kind of explanations I've heard was that you really had to know it was on at that moment. So it'll be a challenge for Facebook to become a place for people to watch video. I think that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah, and that's true. I just think about the way I interact with Facebook. I might watch video for a few minutes, but destination viewing doesn't even occur to me. And I don't think we have any real clarity into the financials of the ESL Facebook relationship, but I mean, for it to make sense for ESL, there must have been a fairly large check written, because they must have known that they're going to have some growing pains along these lines. And their argument is that the growing pains might be worth it because of how much more sophisticated Facebook is as a tool to expand an audience too, and start connecting it to CRM and selling tickets to their live events and all of that in a way that Twitch doesn't.
And basically, you know, if they take a hit on sponsorship because of less viewers, they need to make up for that with a large check. So I'm sure the people over at Facebook, as you mentioned, and the people over at ESL, they had a deal that made it work for both parties. The second story, and we've already kind of talked about the whole exclusivity thing in esports, but it's good to mention that E-League has a multi-year deal with Twitch to have exclusivity for all their programming. So this includes obviously the CSGO tournament, which is really popular, and Rocket League and their Street Fighter and fighting game series. This is really unexpected for me, because E-League kind of the people that were focused, like as you said, on the panels and the conversations and the interviews, E-League was constantly saying we want to be, you know, we don't mind being everywhere. Right. Twitch is our focus, but we'll see, you know, anywhere else. But this is really interesting to see. And you know, Ben, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I was really underwhelmed by it at first when I first read about this morning in my email, because I guess I knew that they had been on YouTube and Twitter, but it was always just in my mind was that Twitch was the fundamental partner there. So making it exclusive, I'm not sure in practical terms there's that many people's lives that changed as a result of this. So I was underwhelmed, but you're absolutely right that when I talk about the panels, that's one of the people I'm thinking of is Craig Berry from Turner and others who talked about that the need for wide distribution channels. I guess because I don't think it changes that many viewers' behavior, I guess it's not clear to me how valuable this deal is. I mean, on its face, Facebook had to have paid ESL quite a bit of money. And we know when I reported that Twitch paid Overwatch League $90 million for those rights. It's not clear to me how big the E-League Twitch deal is. I do have a sense on how this should be flowing economically.
No, because all of these deals are, because of lack of transparency, so to say, they're all over the place. And they can be from a few million or to like these astronomical numbers. What I do think is interesting is that, so basically in the past, if you're a tournament organizer, you had to be on Twitch. And basically what Twitch would say is, you know, there were some competitors back in the day, and Twitch will say, you know, we'll pay one third of what the competitors are paying. And people will be like, okay, thank you, Twitch.
Right.
Whereas now you see YouTube is kind of becoming more of a place, and that for live streaming also, and Facebook moves in, and Twitter obviously, and that makes Twitch nervous. I don't think too nervous, because they really got the esports market covered, but Bezos' checkbook is being opened right now. Right. For this, the OWL, and also, you know, they just announced a deal with Disney for exclusivity on the streaming market. So that's really, they kind of understand, like, if we corner this market right now, then Facebook can't do anything. Like, Facebook might have success with ESL, but that's it. And YouTube might have with this, and but people will go to us. But if we let ourselves slip, it's over, or it might be over.
That's a really good point, and why my back of the envelope guesswork on what the E-League deal is worth or not may not be worth very much, because it may not really be an economics-driven deal. It might be Jeff Bezos just saying, we're going to own this. I mean, he's up over decades now. He's demonstrated a willingness to lose money in the short term to establish a market position. And by the way, I'm not sure how widely this has been reported, but I had a few different people on both sides of the deal tell me that Bezos was personally involved in the Overwatch League deal as well.
Really?
Yeah, that you know, Bobby Kotick and folks at Blizzard were having trouble selling that, and that they went straight to the top and said, this is going to be worth your while. And so that I connected that in my mind to what you just said about the Bezos money, and thought maybe they did throw a lot of money at E-League and say, this is just going to be our flag in the ground, and we're not letting this get away.
I did not know that. I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, you see Twitch kind of move away from being this pure streaming platform to being this, like, full-on, like, marketing tool for Amazon. I mean, Twitch Prime is a huge success. Right. There's constant, you know, they have all these tools right now where if you're a streamer, you can put in, oh, you know, buy my merch, and then it's a direct link to Amazon, and you can buy stuff over there, and the streamer gets a percentage of that. Or they can even say, I use this mic, it's my favorite mic, and they get, you know, a couple percent based on people, if people buy it. So, you know, I believe it's doing well, and I think Bezos is seeing that. It'll be interesting to see over the next few months to a year to see if that monetization ups with these type of exclusive deals. So if there will be kind of, you know, abilities to buy stuff and monetize stuff on Amazon, or through Amazon with these exclusive deals. I believe there will be, but
I think that's a big part of the point behind all of this. And that was something that came up in the Overwatch League deal conversation, where people were saying, you know, Ben, that $90 million for 2 years, that's not wrong, but it's not just the media rights. There's all kinds of ways in which both sides have envisioned that they can cooperate to monetize this. And a big part of that is everything that Amazon hopes to be able to sell isn't quite the right word, but, you know, integrate the 2 hours on average that people spend on Twitch into retail opportunities at Amazon. And I think that's what's driving the exclusivity, isn't so much a change in the esports market or esports viewership, and just that when you've got that one-to-one relationship, there's so much more depth you can bring to those sorts of integrations.
Because the esports viewer is notoriously difficult to monetize. Mm-hmm. Like, the ad dollars are always a lot lower. So you need to find different ways to justify these type of investments. And Twitch really found it there. So yeah, so the next two stories, once again, kind of weave into each other. But we'll talk about the first one in depth first. And this story really was a very unexpected. Really surprised me, but Tournament Org Rivalcade has sold three franchise spots at about $1 million each. So the league has secured commitment from Elevate, Circa Esports, and Simplicity. Elevate and Circa are kind of not household esports names, but have names that have been floating around and have had some success. Simplicity is the brainchild of Memphis Grizzly minority owner Jed Kaplan. We'll talk more in depth about them later. The league hopes to obtain 3 to 5 more buyers by its target launch, which will be in the summer of 2018. They're currently attempting to get tournament licenses. They're talking with StarCraft, Hearthstone, Smite, FIFA, Paladins, etc., etc. They have not come to an agreement with anyone yet, but sources have confirmed for ESPN, Jacob Wolf reported the story, that they have had talks with a lot of these studios, and the league will ultimately hold three titles. So I have a lot to say about this, so I'll give it to you first, and then I'll go on my rant.
Okay. Well, I it was a fascinating story, mostly because I had no idea it was going on. So Jacob, once again, leading the way on this. I guess I've got a lot more questions than firm thoughts about this, though.
Go ahead.
I guess, what have you really paid for if there's no firm rights in place to orchestrate a tournament on behalf of these? How long are those rights, and to what extent does this franchise account for the possibility that the IP holder would walk away in a year or two? So, I mean, that's just the beginning of it. It sounds like you've got many other questions, too.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the nose. I do think that this $1 million is based on things. So based on them getting at least 3 games, apparently, and based on them maybe getting a buyer for media rights or whatever. I think it might be a tiered contract.
It has to be, right?
Yeah, the obvious thing is they don't have a game yet. So, you know, I know the people over at Rivalcade, so they've been doing a lot of successful Overwatch stuff back in the day, you know, kind of these amateur-ish tournaments, kind of being on the brink between the pro teams would sometimes come, and then there would be amateur tournaments that would be successful, and they do know what they're doing with that regard. This will be a huge step above for them. It's interesting. I think that $1 million, it could be great if they get, you know, top games, if they can get Hearthstone League, or if they can get, you know, Rocket League or stuff like that, like these games that and become the official franchise league or whatever. That's awesome. And I'm sure, you know, and if they can get some top teams to buy in, some higher tier teams. But on the other hand, if they don't, if they get, you know, some lower ranked games, right, or no games at all, it gets really difficult. Also, some of these titles already have their official league. Rocket League, for instance, has the RLCS.
Sure, right.
Hearthstone has... I just came back from Amsterdam to go to the Hearthstone World Championship. They have their thing. And basically, you know, most of these games have an official league. So this will kind of be secondary, which is fine. Viewership does well, but this won't be the official franchise league.
Right, which to me sounds like a real problem. And, you know, maybe the grand lesson of this story is that I just need to be a more creative thinker.
Yes.
Because, you know, maybe the businessman who thought this up is actually the genius, because he's thinking this up in a vacuum when, you know, it never occurred to me to do this. But, you know, the Overwatch League, for instance, as many eyebrows were raised at the franchising process and the prices people were paying for that, look, at least we definitely know that's going to be the major league. I mean, ask the XFL about what it means to be the second level of a sport in, mm-hmm, the United States. And, you know, CSGO, I mean, that might not even be number 2. This might be the number 11 most influential, important league in the world.
Well, CSGO, I would say, is very influential. Just not maybe not from a traditional sports involvement perspective, but they do really well on viewership.
Oh, no, but what I mean is that this league compared
the
level that they would be competing at versus
the
rest of it is well down the line. So, and, you know, I mean, the prices reflect that. This is $1 million, not $20 million or whatever, and all that, but... Again, just a lot of questions, and I wish them well, but a lot of questions.
There are a lot of questions. I hope they do well. I think it will depend. I think if they get 3 good titles and they get long-term commitments, which will be key, they might be able to get, you know, some of the lower tier 1 esports teams to buy in. I don't think a team like Liquid will buy into this league because they already have these huge commitments, but they might get teams that didn't get in, or they might get sports teams to invest as kind of a side bet. Very interesting to follow. I just think if this becomes really successful, like if let's say their Paladins League becomes really successful, I just think Hi-Rez Studios will say, great, you know, we're going to do the next few years ourselves.
Oh, right.
So... lots of questions, but it's become kind of a cliche. I have my doubts, but I would love to see them succeed.
Well said. I think to me, it illustrates how much greenfield there still is in esports. And I think that there's been a tendency that now that the new Overwatch League and new NALCS are in market, that okay, we're sort of past childhood for esports in this new world, and that if you're not in there, then you know there's only certain ways you can get in. But here's some investors and some folks who have an entirely new idea, and it's not the same level exactly, but it could get there.
I mean, if we have, as you mentioned before, if we have an NFL, we can get an XFL. I think better thing might be to say if we have an NBA, we can have a G League.
Right. XFL. I should just forget about that. But so, there are, or you know, I mean,
or arena football,
Or you know, all the proliferation of minor league baseball that goes on. You know, so
we already mentioned simplicity, and we already kind of walked all of this story, but this is a story that was wildly underreported. I randomly stumbled upon it on the Score Esports. I haven't seen any other reputable publication published this. I might be wrong, but so the Memphis Grizzly owner, Jed Kaplan, invests a seven-figure amount in esports, apparently, and he picks up Heroes of the Storm team Old Gods. So Memphis Grizzly owner Jed Kaplan and his investment group created Team Simplicity, which is their creation. The organization told The Score that Kaplan, who is a minority owner of Swansea City, the Premier League club, will act as managing partner. This is really interesting and, once again, completely unexpected. I'll give you the mic first.
Well, I think it goes to say that in my world, at the Sports Business Journal, anytime somebody who is primarily known as a basketball owner or a baseball owner, whoever, gets in a meaningful way, it's something people look at and take notice of. This particularly is interesting from that perspective because it is outside of the context of the OWL or NALCS franchising process. And, you know, 2 months ago, we might have said, well, he's on the outside looking in. And, you know, I suppose he is, but he's just going to buy and build his way in. And, you know, I think the connection or the success of his endeavor apparently seems tied to the success of Rivalcade for the time being. But, you know, it's one more guy from the sports world who's putting money into it. And that means we're watching him. And I don't know much else about it, but, you know, it's chalk another one up on the board for sure.
So a story that we mentioned before on the podcast, like a few months ago, was a story that, once again, got only reported by one outlet, in this case, TNL Media, was that Underworld Esports, which was an esports team I've never heard of before, raised what they said $10 million from Kaplan and someone else. And by then I had so many questions and I didn't understand this, but now they start a new team. So maybe this deal hasn't gone through. Maybe this was a brain buy and he's bringing in these people from, I would say not the best brain buy, but they bring in these people who know how to run kind of a semi-pro team and they're bringing them in to run Simplicity.
Could be.
A lot of questions, but as the Rivalcade story, it'll be very interesting to follow. So before we move in and talk more about your experience in esports, there has been so many sponsorship stories that I kind of want to do kind of a lightning round where we go through a selected number of these sponsorship rounds. So what I'll do is, maybe it's a good thing, you know, we'll take turns with kind of reading the headline.
Sure.
And then, you know, if you read it, you'll tell your thoughts. I'll quickly tell my thoughts and then we'll switch up again. So how about you start with the first one? So,
okay. Over the weekend, I think it was Saturday afternoon, the NALCS announced State Farm as a sponsor. They'll have branding on the analyst desk and they're going to continue sponsorship with Acer. State Farm gets eyeballs immediately at the Sports Business Journal. They are a classic big spending sports sponsor. And for them to take this step, I don't think anyone was shocked exactly by it, but that's a sign that everything's really coming together for esports, that State Farm, that, you know, they invented putting their name on the back of the basket at NCAA tournaments. And now they're in esports. It's a big moment, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. And, the NALCS needs to prove kind of that they can get these sponsorship deals. We haven't heard a lot. And this is their first big new sponsor they're bringing in. I'm expecting to hear more about this in the next few years. Once again, because of the big buy-in from MLB Advanced Media, I don't think there's too much pressure on them right now. And with franchise spots, I think they have a year to kind of work on it. They're not starting something completely new like Overwatch, but definitely great. And I think we'll get some more announcements over the next few months. And the second one is that Toyota will be a launch partner for the Overwatch League. Chris, from Triggerfish, kind of noted this. I know you responded to him, noted it like at the launch, the first week of the Overwatch. Hey, there was a Toyota car there. That doesn't make sense.
Right.
And they'll have exclusive behind the scenes content. The car will be in the arena, as we just mentioned, and they'll have broadcast integration. So maybe things like presented by Toyota or their logo flying through. My initial thoughts for this are that it's great. This is the promise of the Overwatch League, bringing in these big non-endemic sponsors. First car sponsor, that's great. I do think that this limits the car sponsors that the teams can have. I don't think we'll see Ford sponsoring the Houston Outlaws. But yeah, definitely great. Do you have any thoughts?
I've got a lot of thoughts on this one, actually. First of all, it hit my classic pet peeve of them activating a sponsorship before they announce it. So I'm in this weird spot of concern for confirming something Chris pointed out to me on Twitter 4 days ago. But that's a little separate thing. Secondly, I think you're right about it limiting the car options at the team level, but they explicitly told me that this does not give Toyota exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, they're not the official automobile of the league. They're the launch partner of the league. So it might be awkward, but that struck me because I don't know why they wouldn't pursue that exclusivity. To me, it undermines the whole point of a sponsorship if Ford can come in right beside you. So this is pure speculation. I think that might be a reflection of the price Overwatch League was asking for, that Toyota said, we like what you're doing here, but not that much. So what can we do for maybe 40% of that price you quoted us? And we'll give you this non-exclusive launch partner thing instead. And again, that's speculation, but it feels like this was maybe a compromise at a deal table, that something needed to get done.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on there. I mean, I didn't even think of that. And that was great. How about you move on to the next sponsor?
Sure, all right. In a short period of time, FlyQuest announced two sponsors, in a span of maybe 3 days, which is pretty good pace for any organization or team right now. It was Snickers and 5-Hour Energy, both companies that are certainly familiar with the esports space and really natural fits for the demo and the gaming. And I think those are two companies that know what they're doing, and FlyQuest made the deal. And if there's such a thing as a routine deal in esports, I guess it is a routine deal, but still to be celebrated, because these are the first deals announced that I think reflect the permanent franchise spots in LCS, which presumably means they're much more valuable than they were even a year ago.
So the FlyQuest team, and I know Ryan and the rest of the people over there have been working really hard on getting sponsors, and they've been saying, whenever I talk or conversations with them, I hear noises like we're coming with big announcements, like it's coming. And I think there might be more coming, but these are two great, great brands to have on there. It shows that the team, with people kind of had eyebrows when FlyQuest got accepted, kind of the NALCS, like kind of the hardcore fan, was like, oh, they're not X or they're not Immortals. But at the end of the day, if you have a franchise model, you do need to deliver on the commercial part, and you need to bring in these brands, and they know how to do that better than, I would argue, most of the teams. Furthermore, they're also apparently doing really well in the NALCS. They won last week, so they clearly are stepping up their game tremendously. So this is a great sign. Moving into our second of actually our three esports team sponsorships, so Dr. Pepper announced a partnership with TSM. Great. TSM, Reggie and his team have been working really hard. They are known to get brands excited because they're one of they have the most clout of any other team in the NALCS. Dr. Pepper is, I think, a great fit. I believe the team at Catalyst has worked on brokering this deal. So I think that's, I think it's great. And I think we get to, I think over the next few weeks, we'll get to a point where we can list out sponsors getting into these leagues a lot more.
Yeah, I think a lot more are coming. Nobody in sports marketing wants to be the first, but nobody wants to be the third either. So I think the dam is broken and everyone is diving in now with both feet. Anyone who is seriously considering it wants to announce a deal soon, unless they get a call from their boss saying, why haven't we done this yet?
Mm-hmm. I'll give you the honor for the last one.
The last one was Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans sponsoring 100 Thieves, which makes perfect sense since Dan Gilbert owns both of them.
Yes.
I don't know if there's that much more to say about that, but it's a good demo fit. Maybe he personally made the deal happen. I don't know, but it's a good match. I don't think it's an artificial connection at all. So one more deal to get done in the LCS.
And it's interesting. Rocket Mortgage has been doing a lot of sponsorship with podcasts. And I primarily see them in podcasts for like a younger audience, because it's kind of the hip millennial version of kind of Quicken Loans generally. It's like a simple way to get a mortgage. So this is a great fit. I think it makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned the obvious connection. So we've gone through a lot of stories in esports. But obviously, having you here as a guest host, it would be a shame if we don't talk about your journey in esports and how you have kind of shifted from purely covering Olympics and traditional sports business to moving into esports. So I'll give you the mic for a little bit. Tell about your story a little bit about your background and how you moved into esports.
All right. Well, to answer that question directly, I moved into esports when in January of 16, we had written two feature-ish stories about esports. I didn't write them. Our sponsorship, our marketing reporter did, and our basketball or our hockey/soccer reporter did, just because he was personally interested. But in January of 16, the executive editor called me and said, "You're on esports now." I said, "Okay, I guess I can't say no." And I think the expectation at the time was that it would be 15-20% of my job at tops. You know, I was heading into the Summer Olympics, and that's my primary job description is the Olympics reporter. But esports just insisted on it being more than 15 or 20%. You know, deals started coming together. E-League was still new and hot, and people were very intrigued about that. Overwatch launches, and they immediately start talking about the Overwatch League and LCS, and just there was too much going on to keep it just being 15 or 20% of my time. Now it's 50-50, and here I am trying to get ready for 3 weeks in rural, very cold South Korea, but there just keeps coming. Esports news keeps coming, and I find it fascinating because it's the exact opposite of everything else we write about at the Sports Business Journal, in that there's no standardization to it at all right now. I really enjoy covering traditional sports, but in excess of 95% of all money that's generated by the Olympic movement comes from broadcast rights, sponsorships, ticketing, and merchandise. And you can be 15% better than we were last year in those categories, but you're still in those categories. And true innovations are few and far between, basically, especially in leagues that have collective bargaining agreements and all sorts of regimented standards that prevent you from really going nuts from an entrepreneurial standpoint. Esports is a total green field, and there's always something new to talk about. So that's been fun in a way. I'm rambling, I guess. It all ties back to things I used to write about. In an 11-year career, I used to cover technology here in New York. So it's sort of a blast from the past, too, and bringing me back to that venture-backed tech mindset. And Activision Blizzard is not a venture-backed tech company, but still, there's still some cultural aspects of the esports space that I'm pretty comfortable with. So it's been a nice blend of the sports and the tech.
Yeah, and it's good to see you move into the space, and you know, you've broken some stories, and it's, you know, positively you've added a lot of value, because I do think that we mentioned Jacob Wolf, and you kind of are the only two of the people who consistently focus on the business side of esports more often than not, and that is, I think, very valuable. What do you see is different from kind of what you're doing with traditional sports when it comes to reporting and esports?
That's a good question, because it really is different. And this is one of the things I've had to learn over the last 2 years since I was assigned this beat. You know, in everything else we do, there's a very high priority on breaking news, telling people things that literally haven't been said before. And obviously, we still try to strive to do that in esports, you know, try to beat Jacob on the LCS franchise stories and, you know, what the Twitch Overwatch League story was worth. But in the esports world, where everything of any consequence is immediately posted by the leagues through a blog post and communicated and thoroughly dissected on Reddit before I even wake up in the morning, there's a pretty big value placed on just connecting the dots and putting it all together, particularly for my readers. I mean, my readers don't care who won or lost last night in OWL. They care whether or not that $20 million that their friends, the Wilpons and the Kronkies, spent is making a return or not. So it's liberating in a way that I've decided to spend less of my time trying to break the hot news scoop and spend more of my time, like I said, putting the pieces together and painting a broader narrative for where the money is going in esports right now.
That's really interesting. And one of the steps that SBJ has made in the past few months with esports is doing a partnership with Esports Observer. For me, I think Esports Observer, when it is generally to find news about esports and business, or especially for this podcast, I usually go on their site and find a lot of material. I think they've been stepping, Chris has been stepping up his game and they have done some great hires. So talk a little bit more about that partnership and what we can expect to see from both of you.
Okay. Well, I totally agree with you. I was very pleased to hear it. It was a little out of character for us. We're not, you know, we've never really had a venture group before that went out and looked for organizations to partner with. We're starting to do that at a corporate level, and I was so glad about this because while I was just saying how I like to keep a focus on the high level and the strategic side of esports, you know, I don't want people having to go to ESPN or The Score or somewhere else if I can avoid it for the news of the day. So Esports Observer, through partnering with us, they can be sort of the more high volume, what's everything that happened last night in the world of esports. I can send people to them and they can send people to us. And there's this really nice matching up of the missions that, at least in theory, through Chris's and their high volume of every little news story of the day, plus my more strategic level of writing, is a pretty comprehensive perspective on the world of esports put together. And we're still feeling our way. You know, the deal was only finalized in November. We're an investor in them. And we're still kind of figuring out what that means. We're integrating all the content. All of their stuff shows up on our site. And everything I write shows up on Esports Observer now as well. We've got big plans for being more ambitious about that. But, you know, only so many hours in a day. But I'm very excited about where it's gone so far.
That's great. And before we wrap up, you know, what are some tips you have for people trying to get into sports journalism? You can tailor it a little bit more to esports business journalism, but general sports journalism will do as well.
Ooh, tips. That's a bad one. It's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding, but I don't think I'm breaking any news in saying that there's not that many media outlets in the world who are prepared to pay for high quality content. So you're going to have, if you're really trying to break in, you're going to have to accept the fact that, you know, you're not probably going to get paid at first what you'd like to think your time and your effort is worth. But, you know, you scrap and you struggle and find people that don't work for free, but, you know, you maybe work for not much more than free, get your name out there. And the upside of this this world of digital media is that while nobody wants to pay for anything, it is remarkably easy to develop an identity through Twitter, especially in esports, because it's still such a new field. If you say a lot of smart things on a regular basis on social media and go on podcasts and find your way in, people need that skill. There's not an oversupply of good journalists in the world of esports. So while I'm pessimistic about your ability to make a great salary in the near term, the skill is in demand. So basically just dive in and don't wait for a traditional job to be posted in the traditional sense of the word. Just start your own podcast.
So, Ben, it's been a pleasure having you. Just for our listeners to know, we'll put it into the description. Where can people follow you and where can they follow SBJ?
You can follow me on sportsbusinessjournal.com or sportsbusinessdaily.com. I'd say probably the best place to see my minute-to-minute thoughts on esports and Olympics, too, if you're interested in that, is Twitter. I'm at BenFisherSPJ.
Well, thank you very much. And while the drilling is continuing, it's been a pleasure having you on.
And, thanks for having me.
We'll be back next week with a very different surprise again.